Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Almost Famous. In the first series of the podcast, I spoke to guests who also grew up with famous family members and discussed how it had affected their journeys through life. In series two, I want to explore the subject of fame more directly by talking to people who've experienced it themselves and asking them how it has affected their own journey as well as the lives of those around them. My guest today is actor, writer and producer Ralph Little. Ralph starred in The Royal Family and Two Pints of Lager and a Packet of Crisps for the BBC, 24-Hour Party People on film, and was nominated for an Olivier Award for his performance as a young George Harrison in the play Presence at the Royal Court Theatre. Ralph also co-wrote and appeared in Sky One's The Cafe and has recently taken on the role as Detective Inspector Neville Parker in BBC One drama Death in Paradise. There's so much more that Ralph has done, but I've been given notes to make my introductions more pithy, so apologies and hello to my almost famous guest today, Ralph Little. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I want the full... Can we sit here for half an hour while you list all my credits?
Well, I'll tell you what, my first question is usually, how did you like your intro? But before we do that, and I will ask you that, I should say at this point that we're recording Almost Famous from the incredible podcast lounge at Factory Studios in central London, and it's the perfect place for all your podcast production needs. So do get in touch with them if you're looking for somewhere to make your podcast idea a reality. Their website is factory.uk.com. So what did we miss out?
By the way, to be fair, it really is.
That's
not just spiel, but we were just commenting on how amazing this place is.
It's a beautiful place. This is the first episode of series two that we're recording. I don't know whether it'll go out first, but so this is very fresh and new for me as well.
Yeah,
so let's all give this podcast lounge some serious love.
A little bit of love.
What would you say we missed out on your intro, though? It's very important.
Oh.
Especially as we're talking about fame. We know how famous people... When I interviewed... when I spoke to David Baddiel in the last series, he was straight on it. He was like, well, you've got my intro wrong.
Oh, no.
And you know him as well, so you know exactly how that would have gone.
What was Baddiel's complaint?
He was like, actually, I haven't had two number one records. It's actually been number one four times.
That sounds very like him.
Yeah.
He's like, you've already said that I'm the most successful person you know, but you didn't quite say I was successful enough.
Exactly. In fairness, he called himself out and he said, one thing about famous people is, lots of people get things wrong about us, and then went into that. And I said, well, the thing I know about famous people is they're very quick to call you on what you've got
that,
wrong.
That is, yeah.
And he laughed and he agreed. So did we miss anything out? There was a lot of stuff.
Those are the highlights, I suppose. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you didn't miss anything out. It's really interesting that... So we're talking to each other the day after my first episode of Death in Paradise. Mm-hmm. It went out last night.
What's the reaction been?
The reaction, I'm extremely relieved to say, has been overwhelmingly positive.
Brilliant.
I couldn't have hoped for a better one, actually.
Yeah.
Twitter lit up, as they say. Thank you to anyone that did that. But
is that genuine? A genuine fear that you have that it could be really negative and that would set you back personally?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%, more so than previously I would have cared to admit, even to myself. I was nervous last night. I've not been professionally nervous for a long time. I mean, you get adrenaline when you're on the first night of a play, but you kind of learn to control that. Or adrenaline when you're playing in a big football match. If I'm lucky enough to play in one of these big, soccer aid or something like that. Sure, you get adrenaline, but genuine, outright kind of... I think so, at 10 to 9 last night, 10 minutes before it was due to go out. Can't do anything about it. Shot the show months ago, not giving it a second thought, done all the press. And suddenly, 10 to 9 last night, I was like, I can't watch it. I think I watched The Devil Next Door on Netflix instead.
Mm-hmm.
And told my mum not to. She was with me. Turned my phone off, couldn't look at it. And I think maybe I just suddenly got this sense of how high the stakes were. For me particularly at this stage of my life and my career, it feels like the stakes were massive. And I have to say, in answer to your question, I couldn't be more relieved.
Yeah.
It went down a storm.
And so then in comparison to, say, when you were doing The Royal Family, when Twitter wasn't around,
yeah.
just a totally different world for, not just for you, but for actors and performers yeah. in general, where it's such instant
yeah.
either affirmation or the opposite.
Dude, you can track during the programme, and people do, and I, yeah, people do. You can track whether it feels like it's a success or not.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, well, if I'm doing this, the people that make the decisions are probably doing this too, whether it's the exec producers of the show or commissioners or mm-hmm. whoever, or publicists or agents. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's a real, we briefly talked about mental health just before we started the started recording, but you know, it's absolutely something we should talk about. We talk differently in society about mental health now than we did 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago.
Mm.
I don't know, if you're predisposed, as I think all performers are to an extent, if you're predisposed to feeling validated, needing validation yeah. and affirmation, if you're predisposed to that, and without putting it squarely on the shoulders of like you as one as a performer, this is the way the world works. You know, we're an industry that works on kind of approval.
Yeah.
It's a useful mechanism for measurement, but it's not great for mental health.
Yeah, and if Twitter and other social media had been around back in the day when you started doing Royal Family or Two Pints of Lager or whatever, would you have had a thick enough skin then to get through it had something gone the other way?
I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. I've never... Whenever you get a bad review, whenever you get a bad tweet... So last night after Death in Paradise... Mm. There were literally hundreds, possibly thousands. I think Death in Paradise trended. I may have even trended, and I've trended a few times.
It's a huge show. For anyone who hasn't yeah. watched it, it's a huge...
It's
been going for how many seasons?
Nine, this is the ninth.
And you're the third lead in it, aren't you?
The fourth detective to take the lead.
Regeneration.
Yeah. The regeneration. Ardal O'Hanlon regenerated into me. Light shot out of his eyes, and I became me. It's a huge show. It's the biggest show. It's the most watched show on TV after reality shows and soaps.
Yeah.
That isn't sport, right? Mm-hmm. So there were hundreds, you know, Death Paradise trended. I might have trended. I mean, I have trended on Twitter before, but it was nice to trend for something good.
we'll probably get to that.
Yeah. Or at least something that's to do with my profession. And there were hundreds. But even then, there were about three tweets
yeah.
that were like, not convinced yet, but I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. Not even a horrible tweet.
Yeah, that's okay, yeah.
Just like, not convinced yet, but yeah. we'll soon see. Seems a bit cliche to me. And I was like, those are the ones that are etched on your soul.
Of course,
those are the
course.
Ones that you go to bed thinking,
yeah.
oh, somebody said it was cliche. And it takes real discipline. And, you know, usually somebody, a loved one saying, get over yourself, don't be ridiculous. To get over yourself and not be ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I've talked about it in a few episodes we've done with comedians particularly, mm-hmm. which is you absolutely have a brilliant gig, you know, and all you can see is the one person not laughing.
Yep.
That's the performer's mentality, isn't it? That's and that's probably, I guess, what helps you strive, that's ambition as well, isn't it? You're striving for perfection all the time, which is, of course, unattainable.
Yeah, well, perfection's unattainable and... there's a realization that I had. There were years ago, Kimmel. The two Jimmys.
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel had a section, I think it was him, where it was like celebrities read out mean tweets about themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was like, haha, this is a funny section like everyone else did. And then something occurred to me from my life and my career, which is like Tom Hanks was on there saying, reading things that people were saying. They hated him, the most vicious, astonishingly awful things.
Yeah.
And so was Taylor Swift. And you think, nobody's liked by everybody. There's always people out there mm-hmm. that hate you for whatever. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter how nice you are. It doesn't matter what work you do. And once you kind of understand that and start to accept that, you go, maybe I don't need to take all this to heart mm-hmm. in the same way I am doing.
No.
And that's been a real lesson.
So as I mentioned, Ralph has very kindly been the kind of guinea pig for series two of Almost Famous, where we're kind of trying to find more of an insight into fame mm-hmm. itself. So I've got a few more kind of formatted questions. The first one I want to ask you, which is kind of interestingly specific, but also it feels kind of vague to me, is, are you famous? Do you think yourself as famous?
That's a good question. I mean, today, yeah, I'm buzzing.
What a day I got here. Perfect.
Yeah, today I'm back. It's a very good question. How do you measure that metric? I suppose, so. I mean, I've been jokingly referring to myself as a national treasure for years, but that's probably more to cover up my fears that I'm nowhere near. Do people recognise me? Yes. Do people recognise me every day? No.
Does and it change? Did that happen at a different point? Do you feel like you're slightly less recognised now than you were previously?
Maybe,
perhaps?
but only marginally, because the people who liked what I did were still the same people.
Yeah.
You become extremely aware of aging when you're in my game, and when you are, whether I am, we're still debating whether I am or not famous, but you could become very aware of aging. And it's not about going, oh, I hope my looks, you know, don't fade. I mean, I'm privileged not to have to worry about that because I've never traded on my looks.
Right.
Yeah. I've not got the raw materials to work with.
You're a handsome man, Ralph, and I'm sure that's.
That's very kind of you.
No,
to say
but
so.
I think it's. It was easy to say that. I think you're a handsome guy, but do you not feel like you've got roles because of your looks? You're saying there's more to it, or not that I'm saying you have.
All right, I'll tell you what then. Well, I hope this isn't too much of a digression, but I think this is interesting since we're talking in depth and you've gone there. It's very lovely of you to say that, that I'm a handsome man. This is very embarrassing to have to talk about, but we'll be open. That's a genuine surprise to hear you say that.
Okay.
That is not how I see myself. I never have.
And that's not you saying that because you want to come across as
self-deprecating. No,
or
I think it's more, I'm trying to just be interesting and I'm trying to be interesting because I don't want to be interesting. But fuck it, let's be honest. When we did Two Pints, you know, Will Mellor's the hunky, big, muscular one and I'm the gawky, skinny, pale one. Mm. That's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever been thought of as a... certainly not a sex symbol or somebody who's thought of as handsome or somebody whatever. So when people say that, I don't think anybody thinks, oh, he's that ugly dude for me. But I don't think I particularly walk into a room and then people go, oh, he's a good looking lad. Never have thought that.
Yeah.
So whenever people, and it makes it sound like they say it a lot, but whenever somebody like you says something like that, for a start, thanks. Like, it makes my fucking day.
Good.
Right? So, seriously, it does.
Good. I'm not just sycophantically saying
no,
it.
No,
because
I just think it's an interesting conversation because we're talking about like perception and mental
but
health.
But I also think, you know, I don't know a lot about your personal life, but I don't think you've ever had any struggles in your personal life in terms of meeting women.
No, but you see...
But you also do have personality
but
to
I've
back
always
it up.
Been, I've got a bit of chat. I got a bit of chat when it comes to chatting to the girls, or I did anyway. I'm too old for that now. I've always just kind of like had a bit of chat and always assumed that, you know, once I can get over the initial hurdle of saying hello, because I didn't have the handsome good looks to be able to like just so babe, suddenly being on TV when I was like 18, suddenly girls who would never talk to me, suddenly it's like, oh yeah, that lad off the TV. And once I've got that initial step over with, then I can kind of use chat.
So I think that's an interesting point as well to go into about fame, which is, you know, you're talking about a time before you were famous where, you know, let's say girls weren't coming up to you in that way, and then suddenly you're on TV and they did. How does that work in terms of your own mentality, in terms of, was there any part of you at that point was like, well, you only like me because I'm on TV, or did you not care? It was just like jackpot.
100% the latter. I mean, I knew that they only liked me because I was on TV, but I don't care.
And take advantage
I
mean,
like
of that.
Them because they were gorgeous. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's only their attribute was piercing, beautiful blue eyes with long blonde hair or whatever, and my attribute was the job I did. That's all right. We play to our strengths.
Yeah.
Play a hand you dealt.
I find that an interesting. But as someone who's never experienced that, I do. Yeah. I think. I mean, I'm also not 18, so it would have probably been different if I'd experienced that when I was 18. But I've talked in some episodes about. I was asked by David Baddiel in the episode, would you like to be famous? Do you want to be famous? And I said, the fear for me would be if people are looking at me while I walk down the street, why are they looking at me? And they don't know me, you know, it gives me a bit of fear. But maybe if it was when I was 18, I would have been young enough where I would be just like embrace that.
I could see that, actually. I'm less, bizarrely less, the more knowledge I've got over the years, the less confident I've become.
Right. That's a good point.
It's very weird I don't walk with the same swagger that I used to. It's not that I'm like lacking in confidence, but I'm like, right, I need to kind of make sure I earn this every day. Whereas honestly, when I wish I could meet me when I was like 18, 19, I would have been like, mate, just calm down. I honestly thought I was the absolute tits. Just at everything, in every way, I thought I was great. There was a room till we walked in, I thought I was going to be the cleverest person in the room.
And did that piss people off?
Well, I didn't think so. I used to think everybody was like, he's great. But I look back now and I was like, did they? Or did they not think I was kind of a bit much?
Right.
Probably, looking back, I would have thought I was a bit much.
Yeah.
Probably... This is pure guesswork, speculation, but I wouldn't be surprised if people had a bit of like, I think I was probably, I certainly think I was liked by people, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was quite a bit of eye rolling. Right. God, he's off again.
Like arrogance. Yeah. Eye rolling. Yeah.
Yeah. And I used to kind of run. I mean, you know, I still do, but the weight of it has shifted somewhat. But I used to, particularly even in auditions or like my on set persona, I'd kind of like have this faux like arrogance, like postmodern arrogance, like I think I'm great at everything. And so, I mean, I don't really, but.
It's a persona. It's a persona. It was sort it's of a persona. Higher status
exactly,
persona. Yeah.
Exactly. I was playing a higher status persona, but I have a feeling that.
Not everyone got it.
Not everyone got it. Yeah. Or that I wasn't doing it as deftly as I thought I was, and often kind of just seemed a bit of a dick.
And is that their fault for not getting it or your fault for not judging it?
It's my fault. But again, we're asking sort of very, very big questions here. Was that because of being famous at 18? Undoubtedly that had a part to play. But then again, are all 18-year-olds kind of a bit like that?
Yes, true.
Who wasn't?
You find your way.
Who wasn't a dick when they were 19 years old? I think we all were at some point.
That's a good point. You were just more judged on it because of your popularity
and
being able to be seen.
The Royal Family came out in September 1998. I was like 18 and a half years old. And it wasn't instant. It took about a year for the show. And if you think about it, the show was as big as it could possibly be. And it still took about a year for me to realise that I was quote unquote famous at that point. Like it wasn't like... The next day, everyone recognised me. It doesn't work like that.
Do you remember the first time you thought something happened where you thought, I'm famous?
There was not one exact moment, but I remember milestones. I remember my first autograph. I remember the first time somebody going, oh, you that lad at the Royal Family. And these are all slightly different. Then I remember the first time somebody went, oh, you're Anthony. And then I remember the first time somebody went, are you Ralph Little?
Right.
And there's a gradation.
And that's the one that means the most, because that's you.
Well, I mean,
that's you for being you, rather than you for being a character.
It depends who you are. If you're less of a narcissist, like if you're a narcissist, it's great. If you're less of a narcissist than I am, then you're a bit like, oh no, I just want to be known for my characters. I don't want to be known as who I am. But no, I loved it.
But all actors have elements of narcissism in them, surely.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to tar everyone with that brush, but yeah, I know that. It's a really weird industry populated by weird people, and I'm one of them. And the reason is, as we've already said, it is an industry which people go into often seeking happiness through validation, which is a very dangerous path anyway. I'm not necessarily saying that's a crazy thing to do, but like you gain more from validation, you've gained self-worth from validation in a heightened way. Mm-hmm. And it's simultaneously the industry in which your self-worth takes a battering more than any other I could possibly imagine, apart from maybe being a footballer.
Yeah.
But at least you get the chance to prove people wrong next week, right?
No, that's true.
You know, every audition, everything that goes on TV, every audition you didn't get, every audition that you didn't even get a call for,
every time you see a peer getting an audition,
every one of your friends who's got an audition, every one of your friends who suddenly gets a big part, it's like it's really hard. None of my friends used to be actors. I just couldn't hang out with actors because, and you'd meet them, you'd meet these contemporaries of yours, and they're great, and often you meet them through playing football with them. And they're great, and they're lovely lads, and you just go, and then you get a bit older and you go, actually, I can't begrudge anything because they're brilliant. But you know, I always joke, and it's true that, you know, about 2001-2, James McAvoy was a peer of mine, contemporary of mine. He and I were always in the same auditions. And I think he's now retired, because I don't see him in audition rooms anymore. But you know, how can you begrudge just a second of his success? Yeah. He's amazing actor, lovely guy. Nifty footballer. I can't argue with any of that.
But would you say that at the time, if he got a gig that you didn't get, you would begrudge
him? You think
him
I was saying that shit in 2002?
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
No. And I was lying to myself, going, why is he working? I can do what he does. Can I? I don't know.
Do you still have to audition?
It depends what it is, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's never been a point where you've felt or said to your agent, I shouldn't have to audition for this. I've done this, this, and this.
I mean, hundreds of times.
Oh, you have done that.
All the time. Yeah. It's a conversation I have with them more than anything. Why have I got to audition for this? And they're like, everybody's auditioning for it. Get over yourself.
That's good honesty. I like that. Just one more thing about your youth I wanted to ask. I wondered if just briefly, you think there's maybe one specific difference you can think of between the almost famous Ralph Little, so who you were before, just before you became famous, and then the Ralph Little that had that fame at 18 and whose career came off the back of that. Is there one thing you can specify as to how you changed?
I always thought, Christ, I can't believe this is about to come out of my mouth, but it is. I always thought as a teenager that I was special. Or frankly, I was always made by my parents, who I had incredibly supportive parents who gave me every opportunity to play every sport. They expected the best. They expected me to excel in every sport. They expected me to get the best grades. They expected, and frankly, because they expected it,
you did it.
It made me expect it, and often it happened. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. At the risk of that sounding like it was about to be like, oh, I was under so much pressure. No, not at all.
No. But because you started by saying they're incredibly supportive. It doesn't sound like they're pushy parents.
They were pushy, but they they instilled in me this idea that whatever I had a go at, I would be good at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily true. But it does mean that everything you try, if you've already got that mindset, your chances of being good at it are exponentially increased.
Yeah. Has it helped you dust yourself off when you've had rejections and just go again?
Yeah, loads.
Well, that sounds like the key, especially in acting and performing, it sounds like the key trait you need
it can make you bitter, though, lead to bitterness. So this is what I was about to say about pre-Raw Family Fame. So I was never going to be an actor. I was doing bits and pieces of that. I was set for being a doctor. I actually started medical school when the Raw Family came out. I always, because of this mentality that was put me, I always thought like I was special. I don't mean like I was particularly arrogant, but I was like just confident. Like I've got a lot to offer the world, and you know what? They don't get it yet. They don't get it. I was very short as a kid up until I was about 16, tiny, by like 6 inches short than everyone else in my class. Loads of friends who were girls, no girlfriends. Mm-hmm. I couldn't have paid for it when I was a teenager. Not all the money in the world would have made a girl look at me.
Right.
So, frankly, I thought I had all this stuff that I was like, my opinions are really interesting. And if only people would just like acknowledge me a little bit more, I'm fucking funny and I'm this and I'm that. And then suddenly the show comes out and this fame hits and you're hosting the first ever GQ Men of the Year Awards and you're on the front of this magazine, you're on the front of that magazine. And suddenly all your peers at school, not only have you blown them out of the water, not only are you the king of that pile, that pile's just faded into insignificance. You don't even have time for that anymore. It's like, bye, guys, I'm busy. Mm. And actually, it sort of confirmed
what you always thought.
What I always thought. And suddenly I did think I was special, which is crazy to think of now.
Yeah. What do you think it took to open your eyes to the fact that that's not the reality of how it was?
It didn't last.
Yeah.
It never does. It can't last.
No.
It can't last. So every you know, life is peaks and troughs, as is fame, career, everything. So I was like, fucking, the world's hanging onto my every word, and I'm really interesting, and I'm this. And then, you know, so I hosted GQ Men of the Year Awards, and we were off the back of the Royal Family, and then Two Pints came out, and GQ were like, no, we don't really like that. We're not asking you back. I mean, that's a blow.
And you threw the table across the room.
Exactly. I upended the table. So it didn't last. It is difficult to deal with. It's easy to lose your head when you become famous young, like these young footballers, whatever, and young actors. It's very, very easy.
You felt you were bulletproof and invincible, and then stuff started happening that showed that you weren't.
And I think I kept my head relatively well, but I look back and was like, we'll see, this is because I still think I'm special on some level. I was like, if I struggled, imagine what it's like for other people.
Except James McAvoy.
It was that. And also, when you say things change, I can't believe I'm going to say this as well, my late teens, early 20s attitude to, we talked about being attractive, people fancying you or whatever. And it was a little bit like, I think I was a bit pissed off because nobody had fancied me when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And there very much was like a sense of going, ah, see, now you're interested in me now that I'm special because I'm on TV.
Yeah.
Of course, it's ridiculous. I'll tell you a story. I'll tell a story that I can never tell in the press or anything because it's the nature of the story, which you'll find out. And I'll caveat this story by saying this. I realized that there are when you're young, everybody's sexuality is burgeoning, and everybody might be up for a shag, and everybody, it's just that's it's not unreasonable to say that, and it's not just guys, like girls enjoy sex too, right?
Totally.
So,
although I wish I knew that at the time,
exactly.
I learned that in my 30s, basically.
Yeah. I basically just was like, "Oh, Fleabag, that seems like something that's interesting." I have one story. And I'm caveating it to say, like, this was not my life. I'll just never forget it for the reason it was. And I was in Bolton. It was one of the first times I ever got recognised. I was in a club in Bolton. And I'm sort of dancing away with my mates. And my family had not long been out. And I look over and there's a group of girls dancing over there. Do you remember how, like, back in those days, you'd dance with your mate? Like, it was just like a school disco. Dance with your mates. And you're sort of trying to, like... We're talking
late 90s, yeah, presumably. Exactly, so everyone looks like they're in All Saints.
Exactly.
Cargo pants.
Exactly, yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah. And I looked at this girl. And I obviously thought she was gorgeous. And I was like, oh. And she caught me looking at her. And she sort of looked at me. And I wish I'd sort of be like raising an eyebrow and giving it out, but I wasn't even that confident then. So I just caught me looking at her, and I probably did like a wan half smile. And she looked at me with the expression one might look at if they'd stepped in dog shit and then just turned. She was looking like the bottom of her shoe.
Right.
And she turned away, and she's with her mates, and sort of one of her mates turns to look at me, and I'm like, oh, shame. I hung my head and started dancing. And I sort of glance over again, and I see one of her mates sort of looking at me quizzically. And then she nudges another mate, and another mate looks at me quizzically, and then they nudge the girl at a turn, and she sort of looks at me, and she's like, I can see her mouth, and she's going, what? What? And then they whisper in her ear. Anyway, I'm thinking, that's a bit weird. A couple of seconds later, I get a tap on my shoulder, I turn around, and this girl goes, she goes, are you that lad out of Royal Family? And I went, yeah. And she went, do you want to come fuck me in the toilet? And I went,
yeah, all right.
No, to my credit or to my shame, I'm not sure which, but I was so astonished and taken aback. I was, I shit it. I went, oh no, no, thank you. No, thank you. And like the politest sort of, that was and I meant it. It was the nicest offer anybody has ever given me in my entire life.
Yeah.
I wonder where she is now.
And no part of you was like, well, you didn't fancy me when you looked at me a second ago, but because you found out I'm famous, you now want to have sex with me in the toilet.
Not really, no. Not really. If I'm
way too much of an overanalyzer for situations like this, because I'd be like that.
If I'd have been sort of less shocked, I don't even think I had the chance to kind of analyze it like that. Although, afterwards. I have often taken a look at myself and often questioned and worried about, why did I do that?
Hmm.
Why did I say that? Is that just because I want people to like me?
Hmm.
Well, I'm saying it now, so actually...
That self-awareness is being able to look at yourself and say, and doubt yourself.
But you can go down a massive
rabbit hole.
Like,
yeah.
So, if I've got a pound in my pocket and I walk past somebody, a homeless person, I'll almost always give them a pound.
Hmm.
And I'm like...
Did I do that because somebody saw me do it?
Did somebody see me? Or am I doing that for them? Or so I can feel good about myself so that I know I've done that? So if anybody ever questions me, I know I've done that. Or so that I can say I do it on a podcast. Do you know what I mean? Or whatever. And then I think, so then it's like, does altruism really exist? And then I think, does it matter? Does it matter? Because they still get the pound. And
I don't know.
You can go down this mad
rabbit
hole.
Because I don't want to go into this, but I also think that that counts in so many parts of life. I do exactly the same, except probably more rarely give the pound because I've got no money. But also I think that you can take that into sex. Like, I think you can take that into sex.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I'm really into doing this because it makes you feel like this. But is that actually because...
I want you to tell your mates how
well,
good I am.
there's a bit of that, but also... Well, is there a bit of that? But also, it's because I want you to tell me how good I am at that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, exactly.
And then what I realise, you know, if I think about that too much, is like, actually... You know, even sex isn't that freeing for me because I'm so busy overthinking every tiny thing that's happening.
I've not been in this moment for the last 20 minutes.
But I think it's still all related... Because you keep saying, you know, you said, I'm not sure this is related to fame, but actually the fact that I think it's quite freeing or new, it feels fresh to me to speak to someone who's had a different life or this famous life, but hear that they think the same way that we all do. Because I think we have this, us kind of non-famous people have this idea that famous people are somehow different or on a different level. And that can start in my head as going back to what you were saying about how your parents made you feel special and what, and you were obviously ambitious and stuff like that. Well, you're just the same. I felt exactly the same. Not everyone is as fortunate as us, you know, and privileged as I was, certainly. But I definitely grew up with that kind of feeling of everything's going to be, I've mentioned before, it's like, everything's going to be all right. I've got this, I've got that, everything's going to be all right. So I think it's really relevant and really interesting.
I mean, anthropologically, we're social status is how we evolved. And social status is a massive deal in a massive factor in every decision we make, almost every decision we make, many of the decisions we make. I mean, it's just everywhere, whether it's football, sex, you know, Twitter, work, money earned, the car you drive, the what watches you wear, you know.
I saw an article, an interview with you where the journalist described you as wearing smart designer clothes and a big chunky watch.
There it is.
It's not even that chunky.
So I thought it was pretty subtle, really.
Yeah, it
to
is
be
quite
fair.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Just one of the two watches you're wearing, though, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. This is a recent thing. I'm not quite sure. I'm committed
it's an,
to
it's
it.
An Apple watch for the podcast listeners.
Well, one of them's for like exercise in the gym. And
yeah,
the
no,
one's
I get it.
The,
yeah, Fitbit.
We're anthropologically, that it's all about social status. When you become famous, what you're talking about, when people want fame, they're talking about social status.
Yeah.
And it catapults you from, it catapults you into a zone of social status that you can't possibly comprehend unless you were born into a royal family.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you were a prince, you can't comprehend the difference between just being somebody who hangs out with your mates and somebody who everybody recognizes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
But is, so I think that's a really fascinating way of putting it, but is it real? Because, and if it's, I'm assuming the fame isn't real because it's just a, you know, it's just a garnish telling you that you're this and you've got this higher status. But when you then realize that, or if you realize that, how much of it do you look upon as a good thing, a good part of your life, or how much do you look at it as like, actually, if I could be exactly the same person in the same situation, but without that kind of level of artificialness, would you swap that? It's usually the question I ask last, but I feel like it's relevant to what you just said.
Look,
I mean, it offers obviously lots of opportunity.
Yeah,
but also mental health wise, I imagine it comes.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
That's the problem, and it's worse now than it ever has been. I mean, in society, and arguably for me. You asked me earlier, am I famous? I suppose the answer is yes. In that, minimum once a week, on average, for the last 20 2 years, somebody has gone, all right, Ralph Little, like that's happened. So surely by any metric, yes. Am I the most famous person? No.
But also because of you're big on Twitter, and that's kind of, I think, how a lot of famous people get to their audience more quickly now. Mm-hmm. More than once a week on Twitter, you're getting abuse from people on Twitter, or yes. people are reacting to your tweets,
yes.
and you've become quite political in your
tweeting.
In
my old age, yeah. Well, that's a new thing. It's weird, isn't it? It's a new thing. Social media's like changed that whole dynamic. Well, let's come back to that, because what I was going to say was that, so yes, by any metric, probably the answer is yes, I suppose I am famous. But yeah, it feels like a dirty word. It feels like a weird thing to say. And it also feels like it's the done thing to say. I mean, you know, it's a burden. Mostly, that's bollocks.
Yeah.
It's bollocks. I'm sorry. Nice. Because especially if you're lucky enough, also people are funny. People... The world at large is a funny place. If you play somebody who's a dick, people think you're a dick, right? Mm-hmm. It's really weird playing a bad guy, especially if you're in like a soap or something. People hate you. If you're certainly in shows that people like and identify with, and especially if you play people that people identify with, I don't think I've ever had anyone recognize me and go, "You're Ralph Little. You're a prick."
Okay.
People either don't know who I am, or they know who I am and they're glad to see me.
In real life or online too?
If people don't like me online, that's because of they don't approve of something I've said. For the most part, I'm sure there's a few.
Yeah.
I can't think of an example now, but yes, I've definitely encountered people going, "Oh, it's that Ralph Little, what a cock." I was like, what could I possibly have done to irritate you? I have no idea, but yeah, sure. But that goes with the territory. But that's overwhelmingly outweighed by... And like you say, it affords opportunity. I mean, I...
I really like the fact that you were just... I feel like, and I hope to be proven wrong, but I feel like you're more honest than a lot of guests will get by saying, actually, those people who say it's a burden... In general, it's not. It's actually
great. It can be. Don't get me wrong. It can be. And I'm sure every individual's different, and it depends on, I don't know, your upbringing and your state of mind and how neurotic you are or not, or how you cope with it and what support network you've got, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I suppose, like I say, it only confirmed for me my suspicions that I was special, even though I now know I'm not. What I do is I look and objectively... you know, empirically speaking, without, you can't argue that it's not afforded me these extraordinary opportunities. The travel that I've got to do.
The people you've met?
Yeah.
Meeting other famous people, has that been something that you've enjoyed?
You know what? There's a lot of people who'd be like, I mean, no, fuck that. I wasn't that cool when I was 18. What, you think I wasn't excited to go to the National TV Awards and bump into Angus Deaton and, you know, from Have I Got News For You and do a panto with Paul Merton? And like, yeah, of course I fucking was. It'd be bullshit to say that I wasn't. I was double excited by it.
Brilliant.
I mean, you get to settle in and go, oh, it's okay, I've got a seat at the table now. I'm in the club.
Yeah.
But... anyone who says that that's not exciting, it's just, you see, these are people that you grew up with and that you watched every week.
Yeah, I think the great thing about having you on and doing you first, actually, is that there's no pretentiousness about you. And I fear...
not anymore.
The fact that you've been honest about when you felt a bit... or you were probably a bit pretentious shows that there's no pretentiousness about you. Whereas I do
but
fear
I'm only saying that because I want people to...
yeah. That's the most pretentious person of all.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be interesting to see from other people we interview whether we will get some people who are like, you know, it's a complete nightmare. I just want to go back to one thing about the
Let
general
me tell you
format.
About the travel, by the way. About like people I've met and travel. And when I went to Brazil, I went to Rio with ActionAid to look at some of the favela. I don't think you're supposed to say favelas anymore. I can't remember. I don't know. But the poverty I saw there was extraordinary, and I was making a video for ActionAid and was only there for 2 days, and you think, oh, Rio, great. But you know, there was no line by the beach. It was a difficult experience. And earlier, about 2000, I went to Tanzania to see an orphanage that Oxfam were building out there. And you land in Tanzania, and you drive like 6 hours through basically the desert, the African desert, the bushlands, and arrive at this tiny town and whatever, and see these orphans who have got nothing but, you know, big smiles and all the cliches about, oh, they're full of life and all, and it's true. And I saw that when I was 20, and I'm like, this is not an experience money can buy. You can come to this country and you can go on safari and you can climb Kilimanjaro or whatever, but you can't, nobody comes and lands here and has a car 6 miles across a dusty road to come and see this.
Yeah.
And if I was to, if I ever saw being famous as bullshit, it's been brilliant. It's been brilliant. It's afforded me an extraordinary life. Yeah. And I'm incredibly lucky. There are downsides.
Yeah, of course. There are downsides. I just feel like I should play devil's advocate here a bit because of your openness. You just mentioned two charity videos you've done, and that's given you the opportunity to travel and see these things. Mm-hmm. Was there ever any part of you when you come back and people are seeing those videos that are like, people will see me as this type of person, and that's great for me as well?
Maybe. Yeah, probably.
I think that's very honest, to be honest, that there's like a percentage.
I also think when you do that, what I do, you have to try and consider how everything's going to look. And that's part of the game.
Yeah.
So it's not going to do you any harm to be associated with ActionAid. Mind you, do you know what? Actually, it did. I got slagged off on Twitter for being an ActionAid. Ralph Little wants to bring people into this country. He's a friend of the immigrants. It's like, two, correct.
I just can't win in those scenarios.
No, you can't win, but it is an interesting point that you make, which is this. I think we all do this to a point, but I think that you find yourself second-guessing and trying to consider on a daily basis how it is going to look if you do a certain thing.
I think that's true in real life, but yours is much more exhausting because it's magnified.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just going back to...
I would say it's the same with every tweet, but I probably should think about them more than I do.
Well, I think that's the nature of Twitter, is it's so,
it's so immediate.
So because of our first series of Almost Famous, where we talk to... siblings and sons and daughters of famous people and how it affected them, I'm keen to hear from you how you feel your fame has affected those closest to you. I know you have a brother who was a child actor and then went to medicine, which is the opposite way that you were looking to go. So I'd be intrigued to hear about how you think your fame has affected him and your parents.
Well, I have an older sister as well, and my older sister she's a nurse now in the NHS down in Devon, and she worked in London she was a facilitator at the BBC, working with a disabled producer, facilitating her daily work. Mm-hmm. And she told me a few years ago, I think it might even still be down in Devon, so if anyone's listening to this, I'm going to blow her cover, but she has stopped saying that she's my sister. And I was like, oh, cheers.
Because of?
You're ashamed. And she's like, no, it's just as soon as I say that, that's all people want to talk about is you. They don't want to talk about what I'm up to, what my interests are, where they want to talk about your interests. And I was like, oh, so sorry about that.
Although, how does that make you feel? Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, in this case, I love it because I'm a dick. And I think I said to her, I mean, I am more interesting than you, though.
I mean, you're saving lives, sure.
You haven't done anything. Yeah, you're saving lives. I've been to Tanzania. When did you play against Zinedine
Zidane? Did you see my ActionAid film, by the way?
Exactly. Yeah. By the way, at the risk of it sounding like I only mentioned that because it sounded like I was good with charity.
You've been honest about it.
No, but of course there are opportunities. You get great opportunities to do cool shit. Christ, I've been on these amazing trips where I wasn't making a video for charity. Yeah.
Jollies.
I've been on massive jollies. Yeah, whether it's to Italy playing football or, Marbella doing stuff. There's all sorts of trips I've been on, Canada, all that kind of thing. But they're all purchasable. Those experiences are all buyable. Sure. You can go to the places I've been in Italy. You can go to Canada. The places I went with those videos, you don't go to a favela in Rio de Janeiro. You don't go to an orphanage. That's why I particularly singled those out.
That's a good point. I want to stress as well that I know famous people who don't do that stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a choice. It's still a choice.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It was not a... it was not what I'd call a joyous experience, but it was an experience that you wouldn't swap for anything and you can't buy. So that's what's amazing about that. But anyway, so my sister has stopped saying that. And my brother...
So what was it that he was in when he was a kid?
Because he was in a show called Born and Bred.
Okay.
Which was a bit like BBC One's answer to Heartbeat.
Got it.
Richard Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Michael French, who's famous from EastEnders. Michael French was a doctor in a rural northern town in the... 50s, 60s, and he had a wife and a son and a daughter, and my brother was his son. So my brother was in a primetime BBC One drama
And you were what age when he got that?
I would have been 20.
So you'd already done Royal
Family.
Yeah, I'm
10 years older than him.
So you'd done Royal Family, you'd done Two Pints.
Yeah. So
any jealousy from you that he was getting into the same business, potentially?
Jealous, but like fondly jealous. Like, yeah. That little shit. Can't believe it. He's 14 and he's in a bigger... I can't buy a BBC One drama and he's fucking nailing it on BBC One. So there was a bit of that. But I don't know. I think he's more chill about it than my sister. I mean, my sister's fine, man. She was joking. But I think my brother is a bit like... My brother and I are cut from similar cloth. I think he probably thinks he's quite special too. So if someone goes, your brother's Ralph Little, oh my God, my brother's a bit like, yeah, whatevs.
Yeah.
You know, he might be, but he's not a doctor, is he? That would be my brother's reaction. So it's okay with him. My dad's just dead proud. My mum is a character anyway. The best way I can describe my mum is she's like one of those from movies. She's like a stereotypical Jewish mother that you see in American movies, mm-hmm. But who isn't Jewish?
Okay,
her unconditional and unquestioning love and support as she's got older. Not when I was a kid, but as she's got older, and as the precarious nature of my job has developed, her way of displaying care and support is to always assume that it's all going to stop tomorrow because she's worried.
Yeah.
So
so she's asking you about what pensions you've got. She's
what pensions
checking
I've
on
got.
Your...
Well, she used to be my accountant. She's an accountant anyway.
Right.
It is great because I could trust her, but it was also a disaster, especially in my, when I was 19, 20, 21, because I don't want to have to explain to her what Spearmint Rhino is. What are these what are these expenses receipts, Ralph?
The perils of having your mum as your accountant.
Exactly.
I've only just realised that, of course.
Yeah, it was tricky.
Yeah.
But she, she's my accountant. She's told me for 20 years that I'm bankrupt and I've got no money. It's not true. I mean, right. it's provably untrue by looking at a bank statement.
Does she mean comparable to her and your dad, or she's just trying to scare you into working harder?
It's the latter, but there's a weird delusion to it as well, in that like she believes it because she thinks it's there's an unspoken sentence there, which is if you never work again, this isn't enough to last.
Yeah.
But she never says that, but that's what it means. She's always worried about if I never work again. And I'm like, hey, we all fucking actors have to worry about that. I don't need you worrying about that for me, thanks very much.
Yeah. Sensible parenting,
yeah,
I call that.
Yeah. Well, she's like, well, you don't want to be living off your savings. I'm like, I'm an actor. I've lived off my savings my entire life. Yeah. What do you think? I don't have a salary.
And I don't have kids to hand on my savings yet, well, so exactly, I don't need to worry about it.
She said, there's a very funny thing that my mum said. I'll never forget it. So I had a quiet couple of years while I was concentrating on writing The Cafe, which was in my show that I made. Yeah. My mum, I actually banned my mum once from talking about my career, because every time I talked to her, she'd go, any jobs? No. Any auditions? Yeah, I went for a thing, but you got no money, have you? It's like, yes, clearly I have. You're lying. So we banned her. She was not allowed to talk about my career. But a couple of years later, but at the sort of start of that 2-year period, I became, I do a lot of voiceovers, luckily. And I went in and did a test voiceover for an Asda advert. And they went, we love your voice, we'd love to keep you. And I did Asda for about 5 years, which was amazing when you're an actor to just know that income's coming in, right? And anyway, there was something, I can't remember, a tax bill came in and I paid it and whatever. And my mum sort of casually said during that 2 years when I'd had a quiet acting 2 years because I was writing The Cafe, she went, this is the kind of thing she says apropos of nothing. Hey, just think, if Asda hadn't come along, you'd have been finished, wouldn't you? And I was like, one, why say that?
Yeah.
And two, it did. It did come along. You could say that about any job.
Yeah.
Oh, if so-and-so hadn't come along, you'd be finished. Yeah, but it did. Yeah. So why are we even having this conversation? She's like the physical embodiment of an actor's neurosis.
Right.
My mum.
She comes from a different world as well, because she did what?
She's an accountant.
Oh, that's right, accountant. Yeah. So it's just a different world. Yeah. It's a 9-to-5 world.
So no stability. So she does all the worrying for me.
Sure.
So I don't have to.
Yeah, and that's probably the best way to be.
Yes.
Realistically. Yeah. Okay, that's gone. Your dad, you just said, is just dead proud.
He's just chill. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask one more question, then I'll end with some slightly more quick fire ones. Mm-hmm. But it's been amazing talking to you. Really, I think the most honest, actually, guest we've had, apart from myself when I was interviewed by David Baddiel at the end of the last series. I wanted to ask one more thing, and you can steer clear of it if you want, but we did talk about in that interview at the end of the last series, scandal, tabloid scandal, stuff like that. And you and I have had a chat before, and I know that you've been stung a bit before by that. I'm just intrigued, as that's something that nobody in normal life would understand. How does that feel, your private life being invaded like that, and potentially even people who, I guess, maybe you trusted, you know, pulling the rug out from under you a little bit?
It's gut churning, actually. It's this weird, I'm trying to think of the best sort of example, the best comparable example in everyday life. That thing of, I don't know, knowing that you're really late for something important, that anxiety, it comes out, it's there. And I've not been hit by a scandal, certainly not one of, I've not been hit by a scandal in the age of social media. I've not been hit by a, The biggest one for me was when I was 22, I had a story sold on me by a girl that I'd slept with, and it was really weird because it was just a really salacious story as well, and it was like, ooh, he spanked me. I was like, actually, I'm not even sure if I did, but whatever.
Right.
But I got a good review, so that was nice.
But that's the classic thing, isn't it? They give good reviews.
They compliment you, so,
because
then
you're not going to sue them.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That's pretty
much
it.
Yeah. And it's always nice to get a good review anyway.
Yeah. Well, we know that we both love good reviews.
Yes,
and we
exactly.
work so hard for those good reviews.
It came out on a Sunday, and you just spend the rest of the day with your stomach churning. I think now it would loop and loop on social media and it'd become memes. And it's got to be much harder, frankly. I mean, it's like you live in fear of, I don't know, who knows? As Dave Chappelle said in his brilliant stand-up, he went, I think I'm okay. But we'll see. So it's a bit like that. It's horrible. It's a gut-churning, horrible feeling. You're like, how's this going to affect it? Is this going to affect my career and whatever?
Yeah.
Have I talked to you privately? Did I ever tell you about being phone hacked? Did I talk to
you
about
that? No, I don't
think so. I mean, I have to...
Did you speak at Leveson?
I didn't speak at Leveson, but I was one of the follow-up cases.
Right.
Yeah, I was system, and I have to be a bit careful about what I can and can't say because I can't name names and whatever legally.
Sure.
Because it was an agreement that I signed for a settlement. But it turned out that I was phone hacked pretty systematically between 1998 and 2010, which is when phone hacking is largely accepted to have stopped.
Yeah, and was that voicemail hacking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of my friends and everything. And... it was a weird, bittersweet realization, a weird, bittersweet victory because, you know, I successfully had a settlement and an apology read out in court from, I can say both Mirror Group and the Sun, NGM, which is the Sun, Sun and the Mirror.
Yeah.
And they never wrote anything about me, not really one thing that was particularly bad or particularly damaging in of itself. But when we sat there, and it's only when you see it all together, and you know, we talked about when I was younger and I was extremely pained, partly because of Two Pints, partly because people see you as the part that you play, but, and we talked about James McAvoy, who was, you know, this massive success. And this is, it's got to be really careful not to sound bitter, because I mean, I'm delighted with the way things have gone and I've had a great time and I'm very, very proud of my career. But seeing all the articles when I was sat with the lawyer and going through them one at a time, it was quite an overwhelming and quite sad experience, quite an emotional experience, and not a negatively emotional experience, because very regularly, and not once a week, but very, very regularly, there was just some... snidey comment. That's all it was. Nothing major, but just like, oh, looks like Ralph Little's out again. He was seen chatting to a blonde called Nikki or whatever.
Right.
Oh, looks like Ralph Little's, he was out with his friends at so-and-so. And you're like, how do they know?
Mm.
How? Where are they? Where are these people? Who's selling these stories to them? And
made you doubt your friendships?
Or, absolutely.
And your relationships,
absolutely.
Presumably.
Who's selling? Who's feeding this information? You know, that's one of the things the courts are so angry about. It's like it ruined relationships and friendships.
Yeah.
And they had a tendency to, because it's not real journalism, it's just lazy journalism, and they don't need to phone hack anymore because it's going on Twitter. They had this tendency to write about you as if you were your character, and I'm pretty far from both who Anthony Raw was and who Johnny from Two Pints was, and they were the two things I was most known for. And they wrote about you as if you were your character. And, you know, both of my characters are slightly kind of feckless, put upon, not particularly bright lads. So that's how they wrote about me. And so for years, no matter what I did, no matter what interviews I did, no matter whether I talked about, you know, all I ever wanted was to go on QI, but they never asked me. And I sort of half joking, but I probably think they never asked me because they probably thought it was a bit thick.
Yeah, maybe. Does affect your
career,
because
that's how I was written about. And so, yeah, this whole collection of going, you know, lose, they'd even use the word loser. Looks like Ralph Little's the loser again in this situation. Right. Whatever it was, just constant, this drip feed of just snidey bullshit about this dumb lad who's like a bit stupid. And I think it genuinely chipped away at my credibility in a way that was insidious and subconscious. Yeah. You know, casting directors are members of society. If you think that they're above that, and they mostly are, but they're still members of society. Things filter into them subconsciously, you know.
Must have chipped away at your confidence as well.
Chipped away at my confidence, chipped away at my coolness. I was in the coolest show in the country. I was in the coolest show in the country. The Royal Family, not Two Pints. Two Pints was loved, but not considered cool. But I was in the most credible show in the country. And I did feel, I do look back now and I feel like I was really undermined. Yeah. And, you know, there we go. I've talked about how being famous has been wonderful. But
I'm really glad we got
into talking
that.
About it now, like it hurts that.
Yeah.
It hurts. And
well, because you weren't in control of it. It's easier to, you know, you fucked up an audition because you weren't right or you did it wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
But when things are being pulled out from under you and you're not even responsible. I mean, even compared to, you know, the person selling a story who you slept with, at least you did that. And
I was
about to
say exactly that. Look, at the end of the day, I mean, what was hilarious was they tried to do a salacious story, but there was nothing to say. I don't do any drugs and I wasn't with anyone. I don't cheat on people. So it was like, single 22-year-old actor has sex with a girl. Yeah. I was like, well, yeah.
What would you do?
Exactly. So it was worse than that. Was a horrible feeling.
Yeah, of course.
But it's the phone hacking thing that feels so particularly insidious. And weirdly, what almost makes it even worse is... it was so arbitrary. It wasn't because they didn't like me. It wasn't because I did something to annoy them. I was just one along a list of hundreds. What's going on today? You got any stories? No? All right, well, let's check this one. Yeah. And they had a list of numbers. Try that one. No, try that one. Oh, here's something. So-and-so said that Ralph went home with a girl last night. So-and-so said that Ralph was drunk last night or whatever on a voicemail. And it was just this arbitrary thing. And you know what? That was my life.
Yeah.
That's my career and my life that they're just... just arbitrarily just fucking with.
Well, that's exactly what I was talking about with the journalism that Piers Morgan when I was a kid and just it affecting your life and them not caring because it's about, it's their job.
Yeah.
And I guess there's an angle where I can say, well, it's his job, that's what he does, but it does leave a bitter taste for me and way worse for you,
but
I'm sure.
But it's not their job to do it illegally by hacking your phone.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Whatever, if I'm out and about. And there came a time when I was so upset about or annoyed about, like, keep on being in the press for this kind of thing. Like, literally just going out at night and then being out in the press for being out at night. I sort of stopped going to places. Mm. So that affected my life. Stopped going to places, stopped hanging out, decided, I'm not going to be seen at this thing. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to whatever. And it didn't stop. And it was baffling. But, of course, now I know why. Yeah. And I honestly, I'm one
must have felt like gaslighting in a way. It's like, you know, not feeling like you're going mad, not understanding what's happening.
The rumour that was propagated through the industry, and I said it myself, is they, in quotes, they have eyes everywhere.
Yeah.
That somebody's always on the payroll. I mean... it's nonsense. If you think about it now, how was somebody always on the payroll? How did we think that? How much money did they have that they could pay everybody across London?
I feel like what's important, what's interesting about that is that's almost playing on the fact that actors have such a high idea of their industry that maybe they would think, actually, some people would think, actually, it's quite possible that everyone's with that important.
Yeah.
That people are watching our every move, but actually they're doing it illegally. I mean, they were watching your every move.
I mean, it's
to your
a catch 22, isn't it? Because you're a bit like, am I such a chronic, horrible, egotistical narcissist that I think that, like, people care about whether I've gone to the pub or not? And then you're in the papers and you go, so and so was in the pub, and you go, maybe they do.
I would hate that.
I think that's had enough. Even sitting here talking about it now, it hurts. And this was recent. This only was came to the fore in the last couple of years, maybe three or four years. And I feel like the prism of my industry has, well, the prism of the whole world is the way we interact, you know, with social media and all this kind of thing. It's shifted, and it feels like I'm aware of the inherent dangers now much more than I used to be.
Okay, so just a couple of quick fire ones. That's kind of try and end on a slightly more up an up bit, but that's really important. I'm really glad you went into that. Thank you so much. What advice would you give to someone young?
It's still a net benefit.
It's a net benefit. What advice would you give to someone young who wants to be famous, and specifically that word famous, but you know, pithy. We're going quick fire.
I would say that fame in of itself is a dangerous mistress, is a very problematic and dangerous thing to aim at. Mm-hmm. Recognition and fame for doing something that people like and respect you for is a very, very noble ambition.
Great. This gets asked a lot around, but, you know, I feel like it would be remiss of me not to. Who's the most famous person in your phone?
I don't know, actually. We'll come back to that. I'll tell you what, we'll come back to it and I'll have a look.
Okay. In the meantime, I will do our outro. Ralph, thank you so much for coming on the show. Do plug Death in Paradise, I guess, because this will come out in the next month or so.
It might be finished by then, but yes, we were recording after the day after my debut episode of Death in Paradise that went swimmingly well, and I'm going back to do series 10 in April, and I can't wait to get back out to the Caribbean. Okay. That's an interesting one, though. We're talking about social. I think social media is the most fascinating topic of conversation because it's ups and downs. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't watch it last night, and I got really nervous because the stakes were so high, because it feels like. This feels like my second bite. If I'm really honest, this feels like my second bite at my entire career. I've had a 20-year arc where I was extremely famous for the most beloved show in the country.
Yeah.
And I've worked solidly and constantly, but it's always been in the shadow. It's been a blessing, and in recent years it's been a curse, because I'm firmly fixed in people's minds as an 18-year-old kid and then a 20-year-old lad. And I'm 40 tomorrow. So it's this really... I sort of can't believe how lucky I am. I'm very just beaming now, even talking, but like... It feels like I turned 40, I'm the lead in a BBC One show that was on last night, and this is the new chapter.
Yeah.
It feels like it's the beginning of another 20-year arc.
Yeah.
And this time...
You're ready for it.
I'm ready for it. I'm more experienced, and I've learned the lessons and so on and so on. So, please watch Death in Paradise and please enjoy it.
And when's it going to come out, that next series then?
This time next year. So January, usually it comes out January the following year. So January 2021. And if you don't enjoy it, that's entirely your prerogative, but do feel free not to tag me in on Twitter.
Of course, but just in case they do want to, what's your Twitter handle?
Ralph Little.
Ralph Little. R-A-L-F. Okay, guys, thank you so much for listening.
I'll follow my Instagram. With this in a modern world, I'm new on Instagram.
Yeah, and your Instagram handle is?
Ralph.little. Let me see. I've made 27 posts. That's how new I am to Instagram.
This has been the longest plug section of all time, but thank you for veering off. That's good. Guys, thank you again for listening. Please do press that subscribe button, rate us, leave a comment. It really helps us get up that algorithm. Find us on Instagram at Almost Famous, the podcast, and
Adele.
On Twitter at Pod Almost Famous. And Ralph's most famous person in his phone is Adele.
I mean, I'm just in the A's,
who is Adele. A Spurs fan and one of the most famous women in the world, so I'll take it. Ralph, thanks again, and guys, thank you for listening at home. It's been Almost Famous. Goodbye.
My pleasure.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.